This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is it just me, or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal. Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
It's Ja Rules by Boogie Down Productions, in honor of Ja Morant's probable, it seems, return tonight.
Yeah, let's get to the injury news first. And he's questionable for tonight, right?
Yes, he's questionable for tonight, which not a guarantee. Marcus Smart was questionable on Saturday and did not play. So not a guarantee, but typically that means guys are going to play. And presumably the Grizzlies, this is not like an illness situation. The Grizzlies sort of had a feel for the process to get him on the court. And the real news was when that doubtful designation popped up.
Right.
When we did the podcast last week with Drew, I had sort of asked, like, have we reached the point where you should be on alert for the doubtful for the doubtful upgrade, right? And we got it over the weekend. That doubtful upgrade for that Chicago game was a big, like, you know, bat signal that job Monday night might be happening.
The other injury news, Marcus Smart is not on the injury list. And I think it's you clarified maybe that it was illness, but then it was working himself back into game shape from the illness.
That may have been Drew.
Drew did. But, one of your pieces clarified that. But he's not on the injury list tonight. And then we did get the news about Vince re-examined in 4 weeks, grade 3 sprain. What do you think of that?
I mean, it's a bad sprain, and it's unfortunate because he'd just gotten back. I mean, he played like two games and hadn't really gotten in a rhythm, and then he has this. And we saw Cam Spencer, like, if you have a bad ankle sprain, it can really linger a long time. And so it's still early in the season, though. And so, you know, if he's back, let's say mid-January, he and Gigi Jackson could both be coming back around the same time
now,
and that could give a nice little mid-season boost to the team, you know. And
that's the guys we're looking at.
And they have, again, it always depends on, you know, other injuries you hope you don't have. But in the absence of that, like, we found out they're really deep, you know.
Right.
And you look this weekend, and like Jalen Wells and Scottie Pippen, like, both just going nuts.
That's insane. 56 points, 23 of 30 from two summer league stars.
Yeah. No, I mean, the Wells in particular, to me, like, that Pippen had a really good game. And Pippen has been, I think, a little up and down in terms of his effectiveness relative to the team as a point guard. And with Ja coming back, he slots more into a natural spot. And I think, you know, he's a good backup point guard. The Wells thing, though, I don't know, man. I mean, the more it happens, the more you should believe, because the sample keeps accumulating.
It's kind of amazing. One wouldn't have imagined. So Gabe did ask me, by the way. He said on Scottie Pippen Jr., he said, are you to the point where you trust him as much as you once trusted Tyus Jones?
He's a totally different player.
And it's such a different
thing. If the word is trust, the answer is no.
Right. Right.
No, Tyus Jones is like apex trust level, you know. Right. I think.
But you would also, wouldn't you?
Scottie Pippen is a more dynamic player on both ends of the floor. Tyus Jones is a more controlled player on both ends of the floor. They're totally different kind of players.
For this team,
if I was ranking backup point guards in the league,
Tyus about have Scottie Pippen.
In fact, Tyus is starting. If I was just ranking point guards in the league, I'd rank Tyus Jones ahead of Scottie Pippen.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But still, terrific, great story. Goes back to Chicago, the house that Scottie built. We're what we're calling here on this show,
right.
And gets the win. So they have great depth. You have a piece up today about observations about the Grizzlies, the start of their season. Really interesting. I've tweeted it out. Normally you do this, you say after 10 games, but
many years in the past, going back for, you know, decades at this point, because I'm old, I've done like 10 takes after 10 games. I've sort of surmised that 10 games in, you can sort of step back and generalize about the team. I never felt like I 10 games into this season, I didn't feel like I could do that just because of all the injuries and the in and out. But I feel like a month in is enough and you know, coincides with Ja's return. It's a good sort of stopping point. Let's sort of, you know, take a look at what we have, and now you turn the page and go forward.
So the first point is one that we discussed last Friday, which was comparing how much the Grizzlies' big three have played, or how little they've played compared to other big threes around the league. But the gist of it, they haven't played together much. So
yeah, I didn't chart out the whole thing in the column, although I had it. But as of yesterday, the Grizzlies' big three, Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson, had combined to miss 18 games among the three of them this season. And the only teams that had missed more games among their top players were teams like in total disarray. Like Philadelphia, Toronto, New Orleans, right?
Right.
And a lot of teams out west have been very fortunate. Who knows? Maybe the trends will continue. But like the Lakers and the Rockets. Lakers are half a game up on the Grizzlies in the standings. Their big three have combined to miss one game. One. All season. Rockets, one. You know, Minnesota, zero. And Minnesota's behind the Grizzlies.
Rockets' big three are?
It gets subjective, but I'm calling it Alperen Şengün, Fred VanVleet, Jalen Green. Right. Jalen Green's your leading scorer.
Trickier.
I think those are the three primary. I think those are the three leading scorers on the team.
You can read more about that over at the piece, but I was really interested in the offense, the stuff. Points two and three have to do with the offense, and it's fascinating because the offense is...
The inputs are wildly different, and the outputs almost exactly the same.
Explain to... First, let's go to the outputs being the same. What you mean by that?
If you compare the Grizzlies' performance relative to the league a month into this season with... I use my sort of control group or whatever, the 2021-2022. The year they won 56 games, right?
Right.
So if you compare the two, like you look at just where they rank in terms of the ultimate performance... It's almost identical. Like, you know, the pace is basically the same. The offensive efficiency, they finished fourth in the NBA that season. As of when I wrote this yesterday, they were sixth so far this season. They were both teams top three in offensive rebound rate. Both teams led the league in points in the paint. Both teams were mediocre in three-point shooting, both volume and efficiency. Both teams were top three in fast breaks. And then both teams, if you drill down to what is the half-court offense, you take out all the offensive rebounding and and the fast breaks and, like, what is your first shot? How good are you on your first shot offense and half-court basketball, which is what they've said for years they want to improve? It's as mediocre as it ever was.
They were 22nd in that in 2021-2022, and now they are 20th by that. Is that, by the way, this would seem, given the effort that has gone into transforming and repairing that part, it's a little disappointing, right?
It is, but again, I would point to 18 missed games among your three best players.
Right.
I think having Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jaren Jackson on the floor together might help your half-court offense.
Right, might help your
That's why, to me, it's a little bit of wait and see on that.
Okay. But what's fascinating is then the inputs dramatically different.
If you look at the NBA tracks, what they call play type data, and so they'll tell you how frequently does your offense culminate in a certain kind of play, right?
Right.
In terms of where the shot's coming from. And if you look into that, you'll see it's radically different. They've gone from, you know, high mid in the league in pick and roll, dribble, handoff, players coming off screens, to dead last in all three of those categories from 3 years
ago. They are dead last in pick and roll, dead last. This is an efficiency of it. This is frequency
of
it. Yeah. How much they do the pick and roll, how much they do the dribble handoff, and how much they do the off screen.
Right. And they have increased the frequency of other kinds of plays. Isolation, post up, cuts, spot up shooting. And so, like, to me, but what that tells you, if you think about all those different kinds of plays, you can separate them into two categories. The three areas where they're doing far less, pick and roll, dribble handoff, guys coming off screens. Think about, visualize those plays.
Right.
Those plays are based on players in close quarters.
Coming together, right?
You set a screen for someone, you know, the pick and roll, you set a screen, guy comes off. All of that is players converging in close together. And that stuff they've basically plummeted on. And the things they've increased, you know, isolation, post-up, cuts, spot-up shooting, that's all based on being spaced out. Those are plays that come from having distance to other players. And so it all sounds very complicated, but it's all very simple. They've basically eliminated the stuff that's involved with players being close together and focused everything on being further apart. I wonder how stark that will be going forward, because Ja Morant has missed lots of time. Zach Edey's out right now. Zach Edey's a rookie. I just sort of feel like if you have Ja Morant, Zach Edey on your team, at some point you're going to do some more pick and rolls.
Right.
But you use more screening because you have Zach Edey. Right. I do wonder about that. But it does illustrate that they really have changed their offensive approach pretty significantly.
And then you had the really interesting, which you can go, if you go over to look at the piece, which I've tweeted out, you've embedded a Draymond Green.
It was after the game they played in Golden State, right. and we think of Draymond Green, like he's talking crazy about Taylor Jenkins and all the stuff where he tries to get attention for himself. This was just like him talking about basketball, and a reporter asked him something. He starts talking about, you know, the Memphis offense was really weird. It was really unconventional, and we had to adjust to that. And Draymond Green, for all of his faults, is like really smart about basketball. And so it's interesting to hear a player on another team acknowledge that this is different, what they're doing.
It is interesting. Within all of this, they're a bad three-point shooting team, or mediocre. Isn't that in the end because their personnel is like it? Like, they may want to be better at this, but their personnel is still pretty mediocre three-point shooting.
Probably, but again, Baines missed time, Kennard's missed time. Jalen Wells is they've added a real shooter in Jalen Wells. I think John Morant's passing is helpful. So we'll see with that. Again, they're not terrible. They're just sort of mediocre. And so I think there is potential for somewhat, you know, at least marginal improvement in that regard.
You talked about turnovers as an area where they are dramatically.
That is the big difference between 3 years. It all looks so similar, but that's the thing that's not similar. They're turning the ball over way, way more than they did 3 years ago. And if you clean that up, that's another thing that maybe boosts up your offensive performance.
But does that go along with the new offense? Why are they turning it
over? I think it goes along with the new offense so far.
Imperfectly implemented.
Yes. I mean, one of the things that I have an exchange with Taylor Jenkins that I included in the piece, where I'd asked him about this, and he's sort of identified two different kinds of turnovers, but one of them that they were having trouble with was, you know, we want to do all these cuts, the baseline cuts and the wing cuts and all these cuts, but he said the players are too focused on making the pass for those cuts instead of those cuts moving the defense and it opens up something else. They want to make the fancy bounce pass to the cutter, and they're turning the ball over a lot in that. And he's told them, you don't have to make that bounce pass every time we run that stuff, you know. So I think there's a degree to which getting acclimated to the system, or not the process of getting acclimated to the system has boosted turnovers in a way that maybe over the course of the season they clean that up.
Defensively, good.
Good in much the same way that they've always been good.
Jaren Jackson, good. Really good.
He's been fabulous. And his defensive performance, I think, has been under the radar because the offense has gotten so better. And the block rate, he's back up in the top 10 in blocks, by the way. That has been on the rise. But it's not the crazy number he put up a couple years ago. But if you drill down into the team performance stuff on the floor, off the floor, all of that, it's elite. It's among the best in the league.
Isn't he a guy who's hurt by this minute stuff I mean,
yeah,
his
but
numbers,
that's always been true to some degree. He's never been a high minutes guy. And everyone, I've never written about this. I pounded the table on this. Everyone assumes it's because of fouls. Jaren only plays 31 right. minutes because of his fouls. No. He only plays 31 minutes because the team doesn't want to play him more.
Right.
And
it has worked. He's been actually healthy. Like, people talk about
it. Yeah, no, it's true. And there may be something. I remember coming off one of the final media sessions maybe 2 or 3 years ago. It was one where Taylor Jenkins, and then Jaren got hurt the next summer. But it was one of those things where Taylor Jenkins said, you know, Jared has a longer to-do list than anybody on the team. It was that one.
Right.
And he said in that one of the things on the to-do list Taylor Jenkins mentioned was being able to play heavier minutes. He wasn't talking about fouls. He was talking about, you know, I don't know if endurance is the right word, but like the capacity to log heavy minutes. And I wonder if something in that they've seen suggests to them either A, Jaren gets worse if you play him too much in terms of total minutes, or maybe Jaren gets worse if you play him too long of a stretch. Like, I'm making this up. I don't know if it's true, but I wonder if they look at something and say, you know, 6 minutes of Jaren is great, but when you go 7, 8, 9 in a row, you start to lose something, you know.
I'll let people read this over at the Daily Memphian and get the rest of this, but there's one more of these I wanted to touch on, which is that, all right, we know the top three, Morant, Bane, and Jaren are great if they've been there. They just need to be healthy.
Yep.
We look at the bottom of the roster, and it's been kind of a revelation and reassuring to have that much depth emerge. But that one of the real points of question is the middle class.
Right.
Marcus Smart, Brandon Clark, and Luke Kennard.
Yeah, veteran players on mid-level contracts. Not your stars, not your like young, affordable fines back half of the roster guys, but those three guys who, in some theoretical like reality, they're not the fourth, fifth, and sixth best players on the team. But in theory, they sort of should be right.
Right. Yeah.
They were sort of in those slots that should be those fourth.
Who are the fourth, fifth, and sixth best players on the team?
It's very uncertain.
Night to night, could be Jalen Wells on a given night. Right.
Right. Yeah. And so those guys are sort of slotted there where they should be those guys, and they're just not right now. I think, you know, Brandon Clark is starting. And the team is playing well with him in the lineup, but he is clearly not quite the player he was before that injury. The pop is not there. He is not as dynamic a player physically. I think Luke Kennard's been fine, but I think we now know that Luke Kennard is Luke Kennard. Like, right. He is the 20 minutes.
We now see what the Clippers were moving off of.
He's the 18 to 20 minutes off the bench to give you some shooting and ball handling, you know. The Marcus Smart thing is the one where, like, you know, based on what you gave up to get him, based on what you're paying him, based on the whole shebang, he should sort of be your fourth guy. He's very much not. And I do think, you know, they got 2 months basically between now and the trade deadline. And I think those three players in particular, and I would also throw LaRavia and Santi Aldama into the mix, those are the guys you're really evaluating over the next 2 months. Like, if you're going to make a move, it's going to be involving that group of
that
players.
That group of players. I don't know that you've had this. Is there some sense that this is the kind of injury with Brandon Clark that he will become more explosive, that he's working his way back? Like, this isn't rust like Vince Williams coming back from an injury.
I think he could become better than he has been, but I do not believe he's going to get all the way back to what he was before the injury.
Right. What was Darrell Arthur's injury?
It was the same kind of thing, but that was a different era, a different time. But he never made it all the way back, you know. I think, again, Brandon Clark knows how to play. He knows how to play with these players and then, you know, in this group. And so he's been effective. But I think about it in terms of, like, okay, I'm in a playoff series. What's my optimal lineup on the floor? And I know the answer to three of the five. And I'm not sure if I know the answer to the other two. And is there something out there where you could add a player who would be part of that answer, you know?
So this week you got Portland tonight. Then you got the Pistons and then the Pelicans, then the Pacers at home.
Win them all.
I offered Jeffrey. I guaranteed Jeffrey 3-1 and asked if he'd take it, and he said yes.
Yeah, I'll take it. I'll take that.
But Drew chimed in. He was listening, and he chimed in. He said the real question should be 4-0, 3-1, or 2-2 with no injuries. If I offer you 2-2 with no injuries, are you taking that?
No, it's time to stop being spooked about the injuries and just, like, you know, just win, baby.
Just win, baby.
I think 3-1 is the is sort of the pass-fail for this home trip. I think 3-1 is good. I think 2-2 is disappointing. I think 4-0 is great. But I think 3-1 is good.
They were so – Portland was so atrocious when the Grizzlies played Portland. That was such a walk, that walk in the park. That there's, but they've actually been reasonably pesky.
They just won at Houston a few nights ago. They beat Minnesota twice. They're probably to their detriment. They've been probably been too competitive for their own good because that team needs to be rebuilding. But they're healthy right now, and so you have, like, you know, some real veteran players like Jeremy Grant and Anthony Simons and Shaedon Sharpe, young veteran Shaedon Sharpe, who, like, they could just go off and have a big shooting night.
Right.
And then Donovan Clingan, you know, I mean, it's sort of like, I'm still not sure he's ever going to score, but as a defender rebounder, he's looked great.
It's too bad we're deprived of Edie Clingan tonight.
That's right.
You did mention that. Like, we don't know what the price would have been to get Donovan Clingan.
We don't.
So...
we know you would have. It's not. It wasn't a choice between the two. It would have been.
We believe they would have taken.
Would have been the nine and other stuff. Right. Yeah.
All right, Chris. You can read it at the Daily Memphian. We will be back in a moment. Jeff Calkins, your 92.9 FM.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
ESPN. This Thanksgiving, they're giving up epic football moments with FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Because right now, new customers can bet $5, get $150 in bonus bets if you win. FanDuel app serves up all the ingredients you need to place live bets, same game parlays, and so much more. Plus, when you win, you get paid instantly. Just go to FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S to join today. Get started with $150 in bonus bets if your first $5 bet wins. That's FanDuel.com/Calkins, C-A-L-K-I-N-S, C-A-L-K-I-N-S. Must be 21 or older and present Tennessee. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem, call Tennessee Redline 1-800-889-9789. Before we get to the NFL, Jeffrey, a couple things. One is, are you familiar with Chuck Woolery?
Chuck Woolery. I've heard the name. Why have I heard the name?
He's dead. He's dead now. He died. Rest in peace, Chuck Woolery. He was a game show guy from my youth. He did Love Connection.
Okay, yeah, and he did
He did Wheel of Fortune once upon a time, honestly, before Pat Sajak, and then he did Love Connection. And then he turned into a right-wing podcaster.
Okay.
Anyway, he died over the weekend. And over the weekend, we had Glicked, right? The Gladiator and Wicked. Are you familiar with which one did better? Did you see which one did better?
I think Wicked was expected to do much better because of...
Why?
The runtime was shorter. It was all, so you have more showings. And so, therefore, you have like more opportunities to... It was the same thing with Oppenheimer versus Barbie, because Oppenheimer is such a longer movie that there were more showings. So
well,
therefore
and I gather
you're gonna sell more
Wicked got... Even more, like Gladiator's been promoted, but Wicked's like crazy over the top promotion.
Well, because Comcast, so Comcast has the whole Universal tie-in, and
were they promoting Wicked during the Olympics? They said
they were promoting it during the Olympics. Everything like it's been everything during every NBC and NBC Universal property has been promoting it.
They both did very well. Wicked, 95 million Saturday, Sunday, I guess it is, whatever. Not the extended, not, you know,
not the, not from Thursday on or whatever, just the Saturday,
and
Sunday
Gladiator
show.
56. So Wicked 95 and Gladiator 56. Now, here's my question for you. I haven't seen either, but I kind of want to see both. What percent do you think more women, in other words, the split between women and men who went to see each of these, was Wicked more female than Gladiator, or was Gladiator more male than Wicked?
My guess is that Gladiator was more male than Wicked was female.
This is the rare thing you got wrong.
Okay, so was the other
Wicked,
way?
Wicked, Gladiator was 60% male.
Okay.
And by the way, when you buy a ticket, you don't identify your gender.
No, but I mean,
I guess they can tell. They say, they look at Jeff and they say, that's a male.
I'm sure it's largely based on the credit card.
Oh, that says your gender.
Yeah. And then you could also tell me, like,
they're just going in. But then you got names like Chandler. Where are you putting that one?
Well, you could also tell me, like, it's like a survey of.
You do like a exit polling.
Right.
We see how accurate that is.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Gladiator, 60% male. Does that surprise you, or does that seem about right?
I would have thought it was a little higher, but yeah.
I would have thought it would have even been higher.
I would have thought closer to 70-30.
I agree. Well, that's what Wicked was. Wicked was 72% women. So Wicked, not very successful in dragging your significant other along with you to Wicked. But Gladiator, much more successful at anyway. I will certainly see Gladiator, and I may see Wicked. All right. In terms of the NFL, Jeffrey, the lead story had to be Saquon, right? Isn't the lead story Saquon?
I think Saquon has to be in consideration. I think you also have to probably.
I mean, the Commanders Cowboys game was wild.
That game was insane.
Wild game.
I think maybe the other thing is, like, are the Lions the best team?
Well, it's interesting you should say that. You know what team? Remember the story? And you know I'm very conscious of overdoing it for my beloved Buffalo Bills. But you remember that a year ago the story came out about Sean McDermott?
Yeah, the 9/11.
The 9/11. It was by Tyler Dunn, who has a website called Go Long.
Yeah.
And basically just trashed Sean McDermott, including with the anecdote that he tried to fire up his team by saying, you got to be like the terrorists from 9/11.
Say what you want about their intentions. Right. They acted like a team.
They were like a team. They were like all locked in. They were willing to give it their all for the cause. I don't know what the metaphor was exactly. And man, was he clowned for that. Since that game.
Mm-hmm.
What head coach has the highest winning percentage in the regular season?
So I'm guessing it's McDermott.
Sean McDermott. Literally since that story came out, 14-2. Andy Reid, 13-3. Dan Campbell, 13-3. Mike Tomlin, my God, it is incredible.
God just wins.
That guy's unbelievable.
Yeah.
11-4. The Harbaughs, we got the Harbaugh tonight.
It's Ball Bowl.
Are tied with Jim Harbaugh 7-3 and John Harbaugh 11-5. But sure, I can go with Lions the best team, although Eagles the best team. Like, one of the things we had always said, Lions are the safest bet to get to the Super Bowl because who are they going to play?
Right.
After sort of a sputtering start to the season.
Well, the Eagles defense,
I would be furious that. Not only if I would be furious at the Giants if I were a Giants fan. I would also be furious at the Giants if I were another NFC team who let Saquon walk out the door and join the frickin' Eagles, who already had plenty of weaponry.
Which is the complicating factor. It's like, I find myself not rooting for Saquon, but I'm not, like, mad at him.
No, you're mostly just mad at your team. So mad at your team, you don't mind him getting.
Right, but also, could you not have gone somewhere else? Anywhere but there.
I think you have to.
When you let him go, you give up the right. But it's like, at two.
When you let him go, you have to assume the worst. Yes. We're going to let him go. What happens if he goes here and is a, like, you should have imagined this yes. among the range of possibilities. And maybe you shouldn't be scared. Ah, hell, I would not have, like, I think you can be scared of, I think I would be. If I were the Bills, I would not have traded a first round pick to the Chiefs so they could pick Xavier Worthy.
Yeah, but
I just
like,
would
that's
not
the thing
have.
Is like,
but maybe you should.
Keon
maybe,
is, but
what
in
is
the
scared
end,
money
Keon
don't
is,
make money.
Yeah, but like Keon's probably been more productive.
That's fine, but I wouldn't have done it, and I might not have if I thought Saquon was going to the Eagles. I might say we're paying it, MF-er.
Yeah, they but got, like that's the other thing. It's like I don't know. Like
Tommy Cutlets was not great, and that, Baker
but
was, Mayfield
but
is
warmed,
doing. Did
but
you
that
like?
Warmed my heart.
Did you like Baker doing the Tommy Cutlets
yes,
celebration?
Loved it because I was.
You, can you mock a quarterback who's basically?
Yes, because the whole fan, it wasn't just that. It was the fans doing it. Like, I saw posters yesterday. Who needs Christmas turkey when you got Tommy Cutlets? And it's like, gross.
That's ridiculous.
And, like, it was giving me PTSD back to last year when our stupid freaking fan base was like, oh, this guy looks like us. We should play him.
I don't understand. I know you don't want to change the coach. I don't understand how, like, at some point when it gets to be this embarrassing.
Well, I mean, they've quit. So, like, if you want to tell me, like, but this has always been the problem. Dable clearly never wanted to play Daniel. Because Dable was looking for every opportunity to not play Daniel. And that's fine. But it was very obvious the rest of the team knows exactly what the score is. And Daniel, while he's probably not ever going to be a top half of the league quarterback.
He's the best they got.
And he was tough. He ran the ball. Like he did all the things that your locker room likes.
Seems to me the other lesson, well, it's just kind of interesting. Chiefs once again went on the last play.
No way.
I'll be honest. I'm less frustrated by it now. I'm a little frustrated by it now because I'd like them to continue really actually lose these games. But I do think it is a sheer sign of vulnerability. Don't you? Like,
I will say this. They feel different than last year. And last year they took more L's. But there's something about this year that, and maybe this is just recency bias and the fact that I'm stupid and I think about connections that are the closest in time frame. They feel to me like the Eagles felt last year when even though the right. Eagles had a very good record, every time you watch the Eagles, you're like, that doesn't look right.
And they were going up, in fairness, they were going up against Bryce Young. Who,
correct.
And it is one of the happiest, it is one of the happier stories of this year.
Totally agree.
That Bryce Young, you bench him, he's getting clowned. What a disaster. What a bust. I can't believe you picked him over C.J. Stroud, you moron. C.J. Stroud is a top three quarterback. Bryce Young is stinks. Like, how did you ever think this midget could play in this yep. league? What a disaster. It's clearly the meddling owner getting involved. And you bench him, you let him sit down, you bring him back, and you know what?
He's played pretty well.
I'm more comfortable if I'm Carolina. If you look at either the free agents who are going to be available, it appears, or you look at this draft class, I think I'll just give Bryce Young another year.
I'm with you. And the other thing...
You want to bring Matt Stafford back? Like, what do you mean? Who's going to... Here's the free agents. Matt Stafford, Russell Wilson, here's Aaron Rodgers.
DJ's out there. I'll get you Daniel Jones on a discount.
Daniel Jones. You could get Daniel Jones. Yeah, that'd be great. And
maybe Garner's back.
I mean, I think it's pretty pathetic in terms of what the free agent class looks like. And then that you want Jalen Milroe?
No, you'd rather have Bryce Young.
After that, I'd rather have Bryce Young.
Well, we've seen them both with the same team,
right? So it worked for Bryce Young so far, and I'm rooting for him now. I'm formally in the Bryce Young camp. I liked him at Alabama. Honestly, I found him impossible not to root for. And I don't regret
it. I told you. Now, granted, I wasn't like I could unload the stock. I still have my Bryce Young stock.
Right.
Now, it's also important to note I still have my Josh Rosen stock, too. But
now, the guy who it hasn't worked for is Anthony Richardson. Benched him. Brought him back.
But I think
it's against the Lions. But he was awful. He was 11-28. He was awful yet again. And I'll tell you the difference between Bryce Young and Anthony Richardson. Well, there's a lot of differences. One has the tools, whatever. But here's the real difference to me. One of them was once good.
Correct.
In college, one of them was good.
Correct.
In college, one of them wasn't even good.
Yes.
At Florida.
But have you seen him?
That's not.
Like, he's awesome.
That's not a reason.
He's awesome to look at.
And so I think, but I do think part of the, I think part of the lesson here is maybe don't make up our minds about the quarterback class. And it, and by the way, how has top three quarterback in the league C.J. Stroud looked?
Well, on top of that, like, let's even just
mediocre.
Let's just go to this class.
Yeah,
we spent the whole first 8 weeks clowning everybody on Caleb Williams.
I have to say,
I think Caleb's looked pretty good the last few weeks.
3 weeks ago, you said to me, and by the way, Bears obviously lose again, and you know, whatever. I'm happy if I'm Jason that they're losing at this point.
Yeah.
Like, now I'm in it for the draft pick.
Well,
right?
And to make sure you fire your coach.
And to make sure you
fire. Clearly. Yeah.
Fire your coach, you get the draft pick, you start fresh. And I remember 2 weeks ago, I asked you who you would draft number one, what of these young quarterbacks, who you would take number one. And I was a little surprised when you still said Caleb Williams.
Well, a huge part of it is I do think it's so much situational. So much of it is situational. I think if Daniels is with the Bears, it's the same thing. And I think if Caleb were with the Commanders, same thing. And Drake May has had to do a lot on his own, but it's not like I'm sitting here going, I'm curious about Drake May. I'm like, okay, I've seen a lot of good stuff, but I'm not convinced that Drake May is going to be, in 10 years, going to be the best guy in this class.
All right, let's take a look at the playoff scenarios in both conferences.
All right.
In the AFC, we'll say Buffalo wins.
Yep.
We'll give it to Pittsburgh for now, although Baltimore could easily win that division.
Yep.
Okay, we'll say Pittsburgh wins. They're leading. I think Houston will win.
Well, we have to congratulate the Chiefs on their 15th.
And
the Chiefs are winning the West.
Yes, and the Chiefs are winning the West. So,
by the way, 10 straight years of 10 wins.
Now we've got three wild card teams we have to come up with. So one will be Baltimore, right?
One's going to be whoever doesn't win the North.
Right. And then right now it would be the Chargers and Denver. And not only that, those two teams have a two-game cushion on really, it's not a very, there are races within there. Like the race in the North is interesting, right?
Yes.
Pittsburgh and Baltimore, that's an interesting race. The other races are not interesting at all, and there's not that much of a race for the wild cards because I guess the only one with an outside shot, if you want to count Indy, I don't, but the only one with an outside shot, Miami's 5-6, and so you've got Denver 7-5,
well,
if you think.
I mean, it's a really this becomes a question of do you believe that the Bengals are fixable? Because the Bengals are going to have
Bengals
games.
Aren't gonna,
but so here's their remaining. So they have. The
got
Steelers
three
this
games to make up.
Right, but they have the Steelers this week. They have the Cowboys, the Titans, the Browns, the Broncos. So that's one of the flip games.
Right.
That could be a swing
that's
game.
That's a good thing.
And then you have the Steelers again. So you could theoretically like flip. Like you basically have to win out. And then if you win out, you could kind of make up the gap of teams that are in front of you.
I think Miami is the team that could upend one of those. But right now it looks like Chargers and Denver. It's actually right now pretty cut and dried given there's a lot of season left.
It's basically like who's going to win the
there's
North.
There's a real cushion.
Right. It's who's going to win the North and then in what order are the wild card teams going to finish?
In the NFC, obviously we got Philadelphia now. They've opened up a lead over the Commanders. Detroit will give it to them. They seem like, honestly, I think they play Minnesota the last game of the year, but I don't know. Detroit looks like a Death Star. They're really good. So we'll give that to them. I don't know who the hell's going to win the NFC South or who's going to win the NFC
West. So I think you still have to say the Falcons because the Falcons have they swept the Bucs.
Right. So the Falcons will have the AFC South, and will you want to give the NFC West to someone in particular?
I do not. I don't know. I don't know what I want to do there. Because I thought yesterday, I really thought, all right, this is the Cardinals' chance to kind of take control of the division. And I still don't believe in Seattle enough.
There's not going to be a lot of wild cards. For the teams that don't win the NFC South or the NFC West, there's not going to be a lot of wild cards lurking because it feels like two of them are going to go to Minnesota and Green Bay.
Yes.
Right? And so you've got one left that could go, that would right now go to the Commanders. But you've got Arizona, Seattle, the Rams, who got pummeled, whatever. You've got really Arizona and Seattle are probably the next two.
Well, and then the question is, like, what do you do with San Francisco?
And then what do you do with totally banged up San Francisco?
Yep.
San Francisco feels like the Memphis Grizzlies of the NFL right now.
Yeah, and then they're going to have, like, questions, though. It's like you're like the Memphis Grizzlies, but now it's like, are you going to pay your quarterback?
Right, with real contract issues
right.
coming this offseason. Did you find yesterday, what's interesting to me is, once again, the college football was more interesting than the NFL yesterday.
But I think that's largely because I think the leagues have flipped. Part of kind of what made college football boring the last 10 to 15 years was you knew there was only like three or four teams
that, mattered.
Like, that really mattered. And then the rest was kind of like, meh. Well, now what we've got in college football is you've got more talented teams that are spread out. And maybe the top end's not as good. But in the NFL, we've got like 10 teams that suck. We've got 5 to 7 teams that we believe in. And the rest are just kind of like, meh. And so you wind up just like going, all right, who are the teams that suck? They're going to lose. Who are the teams that are good? They're going to win. And then it just kind of becomes this, like, it becomes boring.
We got a lot to look forward today because we got the Tigers at 1:30 against UConn, and we got the Grizz tonight against Portland. That UConn game, it's going to be 9:30 in Hawaii. So we'll see if the slow-starting Memphis Tigers, if this changes it up for them, Jeffrey. I'll give you right now a 3-point loss to UConn. Are you taking it?
Yes. You'll move up in the metrics.
I'll give you a 7-point loss to UConn. You taking it?
Yes.
I think I would be.
Just, yeah, if you
now, the problem with taking that is you are foreclosing the possibility that you could upset UConn. But, maybe, you know what? It's a measure of if last year's team were playing UConn. Before they were exposed, right?
Yep. So at this point in the calendar.
At this point in the calendar, you're like, I would have said, okay, UConn's really good. But, you know, maybe they got a shot. Maybe they get. It is interesting that I don't think that about this team. Hand up. I don't think this team has a chance to beat UConn.
And maybe we'll find out.
But I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I hope I'm wrong.
Because UConn literally, like, we can literally do the thing. They ain't played nobody, Paul.
They ain't played nobody. That at 1:30 we can watch Memphis basketball with high hopes. Listen, season series 8-8. It's a swing game here. Go Tigers. As for the Grizzlies, they've got Portland tonight, and Ja could be returning. So it feels like likely to be returning.
Also, the Wrights are attending, so do with that what you
want. And the Wrights are attending. I'm excited. It's holiday week, folks, and we'll be here at least through Wednesday. Jeffrey, what's coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jeff will join the guys at 1:25. We will have Jason Munns joining us today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Pre-game with the Grizzlies will start at 6:30, tip off at 7.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for now. Work is done.